Yes, okay. So good morning, Professor De Almeida. Thank you very much for joining us. As we've discussed ahead of this interview, the main purpose of our discussion is to discuss on the theme of replica symmetry breaking, and to, in particular, the periods from 1975 to 1995. But to get to that, I had a few background questions I wanted to ask you ahead of time. And first, if you don't mind, could you tell us a bit about your families and your studies before you started university?
Yes, well, I come from a lower middle class, and I didn't attend a primary school except for one year when I was 10 years old. Because of that, when I was in age to attend secondary school, I failed getting admission to good schools, to a good secondary school. So my mother, who was a Fulbright woman, she comes from the countryside. She was part were peasants, and so she found me a third class secondary school, and I went to that school. Third class secondary school. I could not. I didn't have a good education. Primary school schooling. And at some point, I was doing very badly due to a very bad mathematical teacher. And so my mother found me, she was very bright, and my father, who died very early, was a bright guy, also poor, and they got to the university very through hardships, but as I was on the verge of failing in a third class secondary school, and she knew that I was a smart guy, and she found me a good tutor, a good tutor. And so that changed everything, because from being on the verge of failing in a third class school, secondary school, this guy took me by the hand and he started teaching me fractions and all the math which is taught in the secondary school. And that made all the difference for me. I learning mathematics makes all the difference. If you know that you can pick up a mathematical book and read for yourself and learn it, then you know, I am an intelligent guy. So the time went on, and it came the time to get admission to the university, and the test that I undertook, I was successful. I went to the university, and at that time it was 69 that when I went to the university. Here in Brazil, the politics, everything was out of place. No teachers in the university, everything was put upside down, and sometimes the the teacher would come sometimes. Most of the time they won't come. And I did that. I saw that in the first 2 years of the university. And in the third year of the university, some guys, idealists, I would say, would like to set up a physics department here in Recife. And by a miracle, I met one of them who had been my teacher in the first year course of physics in the electrical engineering. I was going to be an electrical engineer. And then he offered me a scholarship for doing physics. Say, oh, you did well in physics. Won't you like to get a scholarship for doing physics? And then I, at the time, I said, well, I like to study, and then I got this scholarship. It's a good money, and I need money. And then I got I accept the scholarship for doing physics. And then I spent my time doing physics and studying physics and doing the electrical engineer course. And well, at the end, the pay for being a graduate the university physics teacher would be similar or perhaps a little better than being an electrical engineer. And so I said, okay, I will be a physicist. That is in reality was what attracted me to physics, because as a child I could be anything, lawyer.
So what drew you towards theoretical physics then?
Here there wasn't the option to be an experimentalist. There was no laboratory. To have an idea, the lab class, you just saw the teacher doing the experiment in my first year. So the teacher would do the experiment and you see it. And sometimes they would ask us to make some measurements also, but there was no such a thing as a physics lab here. And so there wasn't this option to be an experimental physicist.
In your thesis, you mentioned that the CNPq, right, the Consejo Nacional de Pesquisas, and the UFPC, the University Federal de Pernambuco, financially supported your graduate studies, and that K.A. Chow helped you coming to Birmingham. Can you tell us a bit how that happened?
Sure. Well, being attracted to the physics department that was being funded here, I saw many of my colleagues going to the United States, to Europe, to Sweden. Professor Shaw, at that time, they invited some physicists to spend some time here, 1 year or 6 months. And Professor Shaw was here in 1974, I think, or 75. And mental deficient to the best student in the class, I think I gave him a good impression during his stay here. And when I finished my master thesis here in Recife, I was admitted as a teacher in the university. And then they started, they wanted me to be in the first class of the people who would take the PhD here. But then I got fed up. I didn't see that would take me very far. And I decided to go elsewhere. And I knew Professor Shaw. He was a very nice teacher for Linköping, Sweden. And I think he liked me. And as I got, I fought my colleagues here. I said, well, I want to go away. I want to go away. And they said, no, you assume the compromise to stay here, and you are not going away. We are not going to support you. But I said, I will go. And then I asked CNPq, and the university. But CNPq refused me And then I wrote to Professor Shaw saying, well, Professor Shaw, I want to go to make the PhD elsewhere. Please find me a place. And then very soon he sent me a letter saying, oh, Jair, I met Professor David Taus in an airport. And I said that I have this Brazilian student who wants to make undertake the PhD. Could you take him? And he said to me, Professor Schultz said to me, well, is he a good student? I assure him that you are a good student. Then write him to get the admission to Birmingham University. That was a place that I didn't know where it was. I didn't know about David Taus. I was a complete innocent in being a physicist and about I never heard of David Taus at the time, although he was famous at that time. And so Professor Shaw made me this great favor, and it was a miracle. It was a casual encounter in an airport, and then I decided to go. Told my colleagues, I'm going to take my PhD in Birmingham with Professor Paul. But then the CNPq refused to give me the fellowship. And the university said, okay, you are going, you have the right by the law to go, but you are going to with half salary. We allow you going with half salary. And I was very adamant and said, okay, I will go. But thanks to a very generous uncle of mine, he gave me the tickets to Birmingham. And I knew that if I would have money just for half a year or so, because the half of the salary wouldn't be allowed to stay in Birmingham. But I took the chance. Thanks to my wife. My wife was fundamental in that, saying, okay, let's go. Things will change. And then we went to Birmingham. I arrived there and knowing that maybe I would have to come back at the end of the year due to lack of support. But I wrote again to CNPq and they changed their mind and gave me the fellowship. And so that allowed me to continue in Birmingham. Would that answer your question?
Yeah. It's a fascinating story. So once you got to Birmingham, how did you hear about spinning glasses and the replica trick? And
That's ah okay. The thing was, I was an student when I arrived in Birmingham. At that time, the mathematical physics department in Birmingham, who had been a very famous department under Rudolf Peierls, was in the process of being closed. Although Professor Skirn and was his, the head of the department, I never had heard of Professor Skirn, all that famous people that were there. So there was a Portuguese girl, student of Mike Costa, who said, okay, stay here in your office and just keep quiet. After 6 months or so, they will give you a problem and just stay here and ask them something to do. And so I went to see Professor South and Mike Kosterlitz and the Professor Tawas. It was fun because he had a big office full of preprints and papers. And I said, okay, give me something to read. And so he gave me a pile of papers. And I went to Mike, and Mike, okay, he gave me some papers too. And I asked the Portuguese, what are you studying? Read Mars, Modern Critical Phenomenon book. And I said, okay, I didn't know anything about statistical mechanics and the current thing. So I bought the Mars books and the Stanley's Modern Critical Phenomenon books and started reading that book. Once in a while, I went to Mike's office asking about the hand normalization group and all that. And after, I think, 3 or 4 months, Mike called me and said, okay, pick this paper, a Schering take part of the physical review paper. Read it, see if you can do the calculation, and then we have a problem for you. And then I went through all the calculations of that paper of Schering and Kirkpatrick. And that was the first time I really heard about the Hapka trick and Spinglass. Mike, after 3 or 4 months and being in the middle of Mars books and the Stanley's book, and Mike called me and said, okay, read this paper and do this, the calculation that it contains. And so I did. And then afterward he said, okay, they want to talk to you. And then that's how I went in contact with the Spinglass and the Schering-Kirkpatrick model. That was about, say, May, June 77.
I see. Do you know what was David's, Tawas's interest in this work? Or I guess he told you.
No. Well, I was, everything was new for me. I didn't know anything about the Spinglass, or I even learned about the infinity range model, because it is in the Schering-Kirkpatrick model. In Stanley's book, it's Katz model. In Stanley's book, he does the calculation for the pure system of this, the infinity range model, ferromagnetic, with all the details. And so I was fascinated by all that calculations. And but I didn't know, I then learned that he had done that spherical model for the Spinglass. But I'm sorry, did I answer your question?
Yes, a bit. I mean, so do you know why Mike Kostelitz was interested in the problem then? Because he gave you this paper first, right, for you to read.
I guess so. They had been interested in this problem, the spin glass problem, for at least Professor Tolles was interested in spin glass for a very long time. I think Mike went into the problem through Professor Tolles, because Professor Tolles interested him in the problem. By 75, I think in the Michael Moore interview, he mentioned that Mike showed him the Hamiltonian and so they did that spherical model by 75, I think. And so Mike was already working with the Professor Tolles on spin glass problems. And I think in my first month there, they wondered what kind of problem they would give me. And I think after 3 or 4 months, they said, well, let's make him work on spin glass. And so it was.
So can you tell us a bit about the genesis of your first paper with Tolles, about the instability of the SK solution, how that came about?
Yes, for sure. But first, I think I have one thing that may interest you very much. You are doing a very important work, which is this history of physics. You are a historian. It is your show, so I am here to say anything that you ask. And I don't have time limitation, as I told you. Since you contacted me, I said, okay, let me go through what I have left. You always ask, have you archived? I said, oh, okay. And so, unfortunately, I didn't, like many people, I didn't keep very much. And there was a leak in my garage, which ruined many things. But a dozen letters I saved. And I found one very important for you. And this letter is from Professor Tolles to Phil Anderson on the 25th of November, 1975. Well, that is roughly 1 month after Sherrington and Kirkpatrick sent that paper for the Physical Review letter, and as you know, Professor Tolles was one of the referees. In this letter, dear Phil, have you people made any more progress with the spin glass? In this letter, he gave the final detail of the TAP equations, TAP equation. And then he discussed with Phil Anderson the details, points out some mistake or error in Mehta's books about random matrix. He says, well, I was getting the wrong result because in Mehta book there is this factor and it is wrong. I deduced that proof and it's a misprint or an error. And then he makes all the details and setups TAP equations. But at the end, answering your question, or partially your question, at the end of this letter, maybe if you have access to Phil Anderson letters or archives, maybe he's so famous that probably somewhere there must be an archive about Phil Anderson.
Very little exists of his archives, but that's a separate story.
But in this letter that David Tolles sent to him on the 25th of November, 19, 1975, he comments at the end of the letter about the Sharon Kirkpatrick paper, saying the following. I will read for you if you have the patience. A paragraph before, he said, well, we should write the TAP paper, but I wouldn't like to write it myself. He even mentioned that he made the initial numerical solution for the TAP equations and how he did it, and he tries to that Phil Anderson encouraged Scott Kirkpatrick to do the numerical calculation for solving TAP equation. And then he said, okay, we should write a draft, but I wouldn't do it myself. So, but in the last paragraph, he says, I suspect the error in the SK treatment comes in the assumption that the main contribution to the descent integral comes from a point at which all the n value of x alpha are equal and all the 1/2 n minus 1 value of y alphabet are equal. That's, I think, is the genesis of the RSB business. In this letter, he says it's explicitly where the problem is, but he continues with one sentence saying, it's hard to argue about this when n is zeros. In the zero dimensional space, it's hard to prove it. And then it suspects where the problem is, told Anderson, but I don't know if they continue. I have this letter, maybe you are wondering, why you have a letter from David Taulis to Phil Anderson, and you reread it and found this. That is very interesting. I won't read it again because of you. Yeah? And I said, well, I think that Patrick and Francesco would find this interesting. I have this letter because Professor Taulis interested me in trying to solve the TAP equation using his method with the TAP. And we even wrote a draft, a written version, but it didn't have, it wasn't published. It is called for the sort of on the TAP solutions, but it had a problem that was pointed out by Michael. Okay, are you hearing me?
Yes, yes, yes.
This work had a problem which was pointed out by Michael Moore and Alan Bray, and so we could not circumvent the problem, and the paper wasn't published. And Professor Taulis gave me this copy of this letter, saying, "Okay, read this and to see some details of the TAP equations."
I see, I see. Well, that's a fascinating letter. If there's any way you could make us a copy, we would be extremely grateful. Yeah. So we were discussing, how did you get to work on the instability of the SK solution? Right, after having read the paper and maybe having read the letter as well. Can you tell us about the genesis of that work?
As Mike told many times, if you ever saw some of his presentation of Nobel Prize presentation, he always says, I didn't know anything. David knew everything. Have you ever watched any of Mike Kosterlitz's Nobel Prize or seminar about David knew everything, and I didn't know. I was after some problem to work on, and David took me by hand and taught me all that strange ideas, and I said, okay, that's fine, I'll do that. And well, that is it. Professor South knew everything, and so he was thinking about this problem, I think, since 1975, after seeing SK papers, he had almost everything on his pocket when he asked asked me to his pocket. And so he was a very generous man and very patient. So we sat there and said, okay, see this work of Sheldon Kirkpatrick, which I already had done all that calculation, and said, the problem is with this replica symmetric stem that they are doing, and if we do the stability analysis, and then it is going to be negative. But he had done that only for the case for zero ferromagnetic mean. He did that just for a simple case. And the problem is here, and let's do the numerical. And he then said to me, okay, and I even have his handwriting with I kept everything that was dear to me. So the two sheets of paper that he wrote down with saying that you are going to do this calculation here, and you are going to find this, and you are going to do the numerics to trace out this line, so he explained to me. I didn't even know how to do the numerics and ask those complicated integrals, Gaussian integrals equation, two couple of the equations. They said, how on hell am I going to do that? And he said, take this, you are going to do this way. Let's transform these equations in partial differential equation. He did a transformation, and then transform the coupled equation for the all the parameters and the instability line in partial differential equations. And said, okay, it's simple to solve the differential equation because there are many methods, and then you go to and write the Fortran programming and do the such increments, and he was very patient, and then I set out to do all that he asked me to do. There was a computer. At that time we used the punched cards, and I spent a lot of time going to the computer and punching the cards and all that stuff that we used to do in that times. And so I spent I still have the results of the computer numerics. And the first date that I have in that big page, I don't know if you ever use that big page that the IBM's computer used, but I went there to see the dates, and I think it is July 77, the one that I have kept. So in July I was doing these numerics for the instability line, and I had done all that proof carefully for the instability, and I insisted with him that we should do the complete, we use the ferromagnetic piece, because he had it was funny because he didn't work out the stability with a ferromagnetic component. And then I insisted several times with him and with Mike, because I was a very obedient student. So I said, why don't we do the complete calculation? And Mike, I remember very well Mike saying, oh, it's very difficult to do that. It is very difficult to do that. It's to increase the size of the matrix. And I said once to Professor Tal, let's do that. And he said, he just stayed quiet, said nothing. After thing that three times, I think, and he said, okay, go and do it. And I calculate that I would like to spend my time trying to do it. It is funny because I didn't know they were so famous. And so it was just a big brother for me, my older brother, they both. It was fun because other people would look at them as celebrities, but I won't look at them as celebrities. I was looking at them as my older brothers, something like that. And then after getting their permission to do the calculation, I went out and did it, and the continued doing the numerics for the 0 ferromagnetic case. And after finishing that, I went to Professor Paul's one. It was in the end of the afternoon. I went to his office and I said, Professor Taus, with the ferromagnetic component, there will be an instability line too, and part of the ferromagnetic phase diagram is falls on below the instability line too. He looked at me with not believing it, and said, "Are you sure, sir? I'm sure the ferromagnetic phase will be will have instability too. There will be an unstable phase here." And he said, "Well, if this is so, the entropy of the ferromagnetic phase at zero temperature should be zero too. And go and calculate it." And get the entropy in the ferromagnetic phase. And then I said, okay. And then I left his office and said, okay, tomorrow morning I have to have this calculation carried through. And then I went home and said, today I will only sleep after getting this entropy at zero temperature, very close to T equal to zero. And then I spent some time doing it. Today it's very easy, everything is in the market, everybody knows. But at that time, I remember some colleague having hard time doing that calculation, asking me how to do it. The first time it's always very hard, anything. But then I succeeded. Next morning, I went very happy. All the happiness of the world. I know he is going, he will come after me. Asking for, have you done the calculation? He arrived in my office. He always, he and Mike, it was like old brothers, I would say that. He knocked the door, Tyre, yes, professor. Did you do the calculation? Yes, professor, I did. Show me. I showed him, and he said, I remember this because it was funny. It was funny, well, it is typical. Oh, you cannot forget these things. And I showed him, and he said, well, I think you have, you missed one half, one you have a factor wrong in your exponent, because it goes like a minus e to minus j naught over j squared t. I don't remember exactly the extra, but he said to me, you have a factor wrong there. And I said, I don't think I have it. Well, I did it carefully. And I did the calculation, and we have wrong prefactor here. And he said, okay, let me go to my office to check my calculation. And then he left, and after half an hour or so, he came back and said, okay, Jari, you are right. You are right. It was fun. He was a very simple man. That thing I remember very well. And then I think that was after that. I'm not very pretty sure, but I think it was after that instability in the ferromagnetic phase that he did gave the first seminar on the instability lines in Oxford. I went along with him. I think Shanto or someone that was in Oxford invited him to give a seminar, and he gave a seminar by, I guess it was, August or something like that, at 77, that he said, oh, I'm going to give a seminar in Oxford, and why don't you come with me? And then we went, David, he went on his own, but I went with Raymond, which is a cult of that spherical model. Raymond. And then he gave a seminar in Oxford. I was there to attend his seminar. And I think it was the first time he at least, as I see it, I don't remember he's saying that he gave a seminar about that work before that.
So what was the reception to that work? I mean, in that seminar and then in the preprints that you circulated?
Well, I think all the reception or the effects it has done, it was directed toward him. I didn't really see, and I saw just the comment, because if he went somewhere and talked to, once he went to the United States and said, I talked to Kadanoff and showed him this, our work, and Kadanoff asked, well, is it just for Heisenberg, or is it general if you use Heisenberg, and what this and that, and he was, and Kadanoff was very, very happy about the interesting in seeing the work, and he commented about that. But as his student, I was a level below that thing. That was mainly his because he was talking. He and Mike also knew since 75, I think, or 76. I don't think. Professor did comment, but I don't think he did put it on the blow it up for the wind. That the problem is that few people would know that he had that in mind. And Mike was surely one of them. Surely one of them. And Mike Kostelitz, I am sure I heard him comment. This symmetry has to be broken, but how to break this done symmetry? I remember he saying something at least once.
So were you following the discussion about replica symmetry breaking at the time? And if yes, how, right? Beyond the ones you've done, but let's say the work of Mike Moore, the work of Blandin and others. Were you aware of it?
Sorry, Patrick, I didn't follow your question.
So following your paper and about the same time, right, there's other groups who were trying to break that symmetry, as you said. Mike Moore did, for instance, and André Blandin in France was also trying to. Were you following those efforts?
See, our paper was basically done, our work was finished by September 77 or something like that. I think we wrote, I still remember very well, one given day, Professor came to me and said, okay, Jai, write the paper, write this stuff. And then I think that was about October 77, by this time, October. September, October. I am amazed because in less than 1 year, I was writing a paper while the other guys there, the students, would take 2 years or. And then I think of the golf. Great. From being taken off, an imbecile as a child, I was working with finest physicist of the world. Oh, that's great. How I should be. Thanks, Harry. And then that was about September, October, that he came to me to write the paper, Jairo. And so I drafted after, of course, I drafted that he would polish and give the. And then I think by November, we had that preprint that we sent out. And before we sent out that preprint about that paper, nobody ever talked about breaking replica symmetry. You see, I've been seeing dates, and the Journal of Physics received our paper on the 1st of December 1977. And so we must have sent it by the end of November, mid-November, so something like that, because that takes time. And so after sent out, and then people started working on the problem. I think Michael Moore and Alan Bray were the first one to propose some scheme to break replica symmetry. And you see the dates of in that paper, and it's all these people that you mentioned are 78 or something like that. Nobody ever said anything about breaking happy summit before our people. So I was following very closely all that effort that people were doing. At first, I saw the paper by Graham Moore, and that didn't make many sense to me, breaking the NHAP is in two sets, one M and N minus M. I didn't see any sense in that, but the way they did that field theoretical, they could somehow take the N limit going to zero. Because if you take that in the SK mode and try to make the N goes to zero limit, that thing that does not work there. I said, well, this cannot be a very nice. But Blandin's, I remember very well, because he got a decrease in the entropy, and that was very good. And I remember very well because I met him in Lesus Summers School, he asked to meet me. I didn't know him because I was an innocent guy from a place lost in the end of the world. And so I didn't know anybody, but I was there, and Blandin asked, I want to talk to you. I was very happy and very sad simultaneously, because when I was in the Lesus Summer School, my wife got sick, badly sick, and I had to leave the school. At the middle of the school, it was exactly on the day Blandin was there asking to talk to me, and he almost got me by the arm to show me his work, and it was exactly at the time that I had to leave to the school because of the trains and of that thing. And I remember, I am sad for not having the opportunity to discuss with him more closely, because it would have been wonderful. But I knew his I was informed about his work. Well, there were other people. I think he co-authored the work with Thomas Garel and the other guy, I think. So after that, I think it was Paris who came out with his work at the end of 78 or something like that. But Paris always sent his preprints to Professor Taus, who I think it was most of the time, who would give me my cost and the tender, and then I would get the
So that's how you found out about the Parisi solution, is through a preprint that he sent to Mike or to Professor Tallis.
Yeah.
So what was your reaction to the Parisi solution?
I think it was just having seen Michael Moore and Blandin's, I just thought that it was a generalization of Blandin's scheme, or a clever generalization of Blandin's scheme, and that might be the proper one. But it's just that we are scientists looking for solution, and that may be it. But looking back at the letters now, I got half a dozen letters, and I get a letter from I got a copy of a letter from Professor Towers to Mike saying, oh, I am enclosing a preprint from Paris, and I'm very excited about what he finds, and he got very happy with Paris' solution, and he started immediately reproducing it. And so explicitly, I don't think his numeric is very good. That must be some error in his calculation, but there is very promising. I think it's the right solution. So we all started doing Paris's scheme that resulted in a paper that we carried out the stability.
Because at that point, Professor Thallus was not at Birmingham anymore, right? So you were contacting him mostly through letters, is that?
Yes, Mike was still there. I was often in the as a child, and at the end I was often supervisor in Birmingham, because both Mike Kosterlitz and Professor Tau left Birmingham, and I was left there alone in my last year. So Professor Tau left. After a while, Mike left too. So in my last years, only Ray was there, who had worked in the spherical model, but was not very interested in spin glass anymore.
I see. So you wrote that last paper where you studied the stability of the Parisi solution together, well, like this.
Professor Tollos, I think it took some time, and Mike took to sell house, or once in a while he would appear there and take care of some business left or something, or I don't know, but for short periods. I think that paper we finished while Mike was still there. I don't remember exactly.
So after completing your PhD, you yourself left Birmingham and went back to Recife, right, to be on the faculty. And shortly thereafter, you had a visitor, I think, from Porto, Eduardo Lage, who worked with you on a spin glass model, on a spin glass study. Can you tell us a bit more about how that came about?
Yes, I can tell you. See, back in 78, I saw that advertisement about Lesus Summer School. And I asked the Professor Thallus, Professor, can I go to this Lesus Summer School that he was announced as one of the lecture? And he said, yes, you can. You can. I'll write you a recommendation letter. And so I applied for Lesus Summer School. He gave me the recommendation letter, and it is very nice to work with famous people, because when you have one application and the guy is famous, is a celebrity, you know for beforehand that you are going to be accepted. Oh, it's so nice to be friends of the king. And so I was accepted to the Lesus Summer School. And at Lesus Summer School, I don't know if you were going to ask me about that, but you asked some people about the, at least to Bernard, and then I advanced this question to you. And for me, it was nice. A place to meet people. to learn a thing, it was a complete waste of time. But to know people, to find people, to see people, to talk to people, it was wonderful. I met Gerard Toulouse, I met Blandin, Cyrano de Dominici was there when I was still there, but I saw Phil Anderson, Nozieres came around once, and very bright, talking, and it's a figure that makes himself not small, speaking, and that's how I see him. And I met Bernard Derrida, Thomas Garrel, and one Brazilian was there, Amos Tropper, who had been my teacher back in the university when I was in the first year, and in the secondary school. He was my teacher too in the secondary school and in the first year university. Who was there? Amos Tropper. He works, I think he now is in Israel. Ben, there I met Edward Lash and the, it's a nice guy from Porto. And he had taken his PhD with Chinchcomb in
Oxford.
And worked on replica tricky, working using replica tricky for percolation problems, etc. He knew much more than me about the impact of our work. So we became very good friends. And they are, as an aside, he's a very rich man, he and his wife. And that made me, well, I didn't know that, but I have heard, and as a, just an aside, but he gave me a wonderful week in Porto, because he said, well, Jair, when you go back to Brazil, come to Porto, come to visit me. And I did accept it. Also, my colleague of officer was from Porto too, but the invitation of Edward was, because he was, he and his wife were very rich, and they gave me an apartment with a house, with everything in Porto, where I could stay as long as I wished to know Portugal. And so I know Portugal because of him. It was very, very nice out of him, because cars, apartment, okay. Physics is nice being when you find the right people. So after coming back to Brazil, I invited him, say, Edward, why don't you come to Brazil? I can ask CNPq to give you money. So it was easy because I had some good friends who had influence to influence CNPq to give the support. And I was at the top of the spin glass business, and he wanted to learn about Paris and all the stuff that I had done with David Talos and Mike Kosterlitz. And so he came to Brazil to learn it. I would say he wouldn't have come if I had done something else, I guess. But he was very interested in working on spin glass. And so I met him in Les Ouches,
years, right? Did you keep abreast, or did you follow what was happening in the development of replica symmetry breaking with the work of Mézard, Virasoro, and others?
Sure. I was reading that all the time, and I seeing the progress. I really did follow the this one. I followed it, all the progress that people was doing. And you see it, as I see it, it's a big business that involves many people. It's a social thing. You cannot do it alone. No one does it alone. So it's a social thing, and it's a group, and a social activity. And I saw it flourishing, and I thank you all for all the progress that the field has done through the year with the collaboration of many people. And I've seen this meeting. 40 years of RSB, and you know how the community has grown. Thanks to Paris and Sherrington and many others who have been interested. And the importance of the field, you know that a few others say that. This is one of the most important developments in modern theoretical physics. This evolution of the spinless problem. Mm-hmm. The physical object per se is not that like superconductive, like this is superconductivity or superfluid, but the spin-offs that came from the study of this dilute magnetic system is wonderful. All the fields, I get amazed. While you invite me, I see this quantum gravity, black holes. I saw my name the other day in a paper about the black holes and parallel universe and all this stuff. The good gosh, and breaking of replica symmetry. Other universe, many string theory. How far this thing has gone? So
you could follow, but as you said, it was a very social thing. So from Recife, it was really hard to be involved in that community. Is that?
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
So you went on sabbatical a few years later at UCLA. With Robin Bruinsma, to work on the RFIM, right, on the random field easing model. Why first, and then how did that come about? Why at UCLA with Robin Bruinsma, and how did this interaction begin?
Look, I felt. 3 times going to Canada. I think that was not the time. When I decided to go to after I had to come back to Brazil. Usually when one finishes the PhD, one goes to a postdoc somewhere. But I had a contract, and that contract obliged me to come back to Brazil. If I didn't come, I won't be an honest man, and some people do that and say, okay, go to hell, give bananas to the accountants, and it goes elsewhere, take a PhD, a postdoc. But I had to come back to spend at least the time that I was away here before going away again, and so I came back, which is. I could have got a good place to go to get a postdoc, but I didn't do that. I came back here, and after some time, it was 5 years, 6 years, 6 years. After 6 years, I said, okay, now I can go for a postdoc. I could have gone to good place like Rome or Paris or something like that, that would be much more enlightenment for me than I think going to. Nowadays, I think I should have gone to Paris or to Rome. And why did I go to the United States? I think that maybe it was the USA, made in USA, the United States, the big power, the great place, that influenced me. The family, Disneyland, they are okay. And it's some money, because I have a big fund. I had a big fund. I had a problem because one of my kids is handicapped, and so the support for the postdoc alone that I would get wouldn't be sufficient. And I had miscalculated that I wouldn't get support from elsewhere. If I had chosen Rome or Paris, I wouldn't get support to go there. And when I wrote, there was a Brazilian at the University of Los Angeles getting his PhD there, Fernando Machado. When I asked him, would you know if Ray would like me there, and he would give me some support, and he talked to Ray, who was very enthusiastic about my going there, and gave me
Ray some. Orbach, right?
Ray Orbach, yes, very nice. I like him very much. He gave me support to going to Los Angeles. It was very nice because I had healthcare from the university. So I got some money from the UCLA, and I was enrolled in their healthcare program. And that was fundamental if you have kids and a family. And I had to take with myself a maid to take care, because my wife said, okay, I wouldn't go if you would take someone to help me out with these kids. And then UCLA, the United States, because of the support, basically, and that business, that it would be fine. The United States is the big country. And it was very fine for my family. It was a very nice, because Patrick, you know the difference that a good education makes. I spent 1 year at UCLA, and then beforehand, you didn't ask, but in 85, I went to San Francisco. There was an international conference on magnetism, San Francisco. And I went to that conference, sunk to my master thesis advisor, because I applied for a support from here to CNPq, and I refused to the support to go to the conference. And I told, but this guy who is very influential here said, okay, let's go, let's prepare the baggage. Look, I said, oh, my, they refused my support. He said, what? That can be true. He picked up the phone and talked to someone in Brasilia, and the next day I had the tickets and the support. This country here is incredible. In some sense, we are in a pre-French Revolution situation. In other things, due to the internet, no. But in many things, Brazil is still a pre-French Revolution country. So yes, but then coming back to that to the LA, I went to San Francisco, and then I knew some of the United States, and then I went to UCLA with my family, and there my daughter went to a very good public school. This is Castle High Public School. Soon she was talking English because she had English class. After 1 year in the United States, my daughter, who was 8 years old, was speaking English very nice and was her teacher was saying to me, "Oh, she's very bright, she's very bright, she's very bright." And then we went to Saclay, the Zouche. Because in 85, Cyrano de Dominicis met me in San Francisco and put a note on the table there. "Jairo Almeida, I want to know you." And I attended his very nice guy, Cyrano. And we became friends. He came here very many times to Brazil. And he put a note there. I attended his talk in San Francisco. I said, "Jairo Almeida, I want to meet you. I meet me at that time in that place." And so I said to him, "Okay, wouldn't you like me to take 6 months of my postdoc at your place?" He said, "Oh, fine, come here," and gave me support too in France. "Oh, well, that is fine, come, well, surely, surely, when you come." It was very nice. I love Saclay. It was very fine from him. And then after my 1 year at the UCLA, I went to France. And that you see clearly the effects of a good education. My 8 years old daughter speaking English, we went to France. I tried to learn French, but I think I didn't dedicate very much. But after talking to people all the time, seeing TV, and after you could speak some a little bit. But my daughter went to a good school in Les Ulis, Saclay. In 3 months, the little girl was talking French. And before we left that, we had to take her along us. Whenever we went to some place that we need someone talking French, we took her. "Come with us, we have to talk." And that school was, it's incredible. My girl was 9 and was speaking 3 languages. That was incredible. I didn't see what the effect. At that age, I could barely speak Portuguese. And then, wow, that was it. I think that is the wonderful, that is what. And then, I don't know if you were going to ask about Saclay, but that was my story. And Saclay, it is wonderful. It, by the way, you see the difference of. There isn't such thing as doing physics in the desert, in a lonely place. Because at Saclay, we, Cyrano and I, we started working on a spring glass on a Brandon tree. And we extend our work by Katsura, where he used a kind of Sopolinsky and Vienna brain model, where they took a solution for the internal field, like delta functions, and the Katsura didn't put, I think, a continuous part, but we we extended that work. I don't remember all the details, but the thing is, at some point we had to do triple Bessel integral. It's a complicated thing. You just do double Bessel integral. You have to go to a handbook of integral and imagine three Bessel products of three Bessel functions. And Cyrano, after that, Cyrano looked at me and said, well, at SACLAR you have 5,000 PhD work, people work, and said, I know someone who had done a Bessel, all kinds of Bessel functions, and I think he will help us out. And he phoned the guy, and the guy said, well, I have a manual here with all kinds of people in the Bessel integral. And that is it, and that saved us, I don't know how many months of calculation. Because just a phone call and being in the right place, you get the right answer at your door. And if you go to the wrong place, you go nowhere and you are stuck all life. And it was very nice.
So was that Peter Motisha who knew these integrals, or was someone else?
No, Peter Motchow, we extended a work that he had done with Peter Motchow, but I don't know him personally.
Okay.
Motchow, he had already left SACLAR.
Okay, so you don't remember the name of the person who knew the Bessel integrals well?
No, he had all the kinds of triple Bessel integral. Mm-hmm. Done in a monograph.
I see.
A monograph.
So after your postdocs / sabbatical in the US and in France, you came back to Brazil, and you mostly started working on short range spinning glasses, I think, if I understand well. And a few years later, you wrote a review. And so you said the present status of the studies in spin glasses reflects how hard the problem is and the far-reaching consequences of its eventual comprehension. What were you trying to comprehend, or what was the research program for you at that point?
You are mentioning a review from
the Brazilian Journal of Physics in 1994.
94. Yeah, well, I think I was just following Anderson's because there is that series of papers by Anderson Physics Today, where there was that common copy of things, and I was just trying to copy him about this, all okay. The consequences, the implications, and the use in other fields of knowledge. That was coming about all the time, popping up.
So how influential was the work that you'd done on spin glasses been on the rest of your research program afterwards? Or
yeah, well, I must say when I finished my basically by 78 I had almost finished my thesis, and before Professor Sauls left Birmingham, I asked him. I never had a kind of mentor or tutor in life, so I asked him, Professor, what do you suggest for me to Would you suggest something for do? And he just said, try something else. But I didn't follow his advice, and I said it to myself. I think I. I didn't. I think I, you two, through this project, gave me a chance to revive, to see back in my life all what I have done in life, how it was, how it developed. And I think I put too much effort to get to where I came. Because nothing came easily. It was very, very hard. As I said to you, I didn't attend a regular primary school except for 1 year. And I failed, and my mother, who was a bright woman, tried to made me make an admission test for a famous college, school, secondary school. I failed badly. I never forget that. And then she admitted, okay, it's better he finished secondary school in a bad school than going nowhere. And then I went to a third class secondary school. And I almost felt that she had to take serious action and find out someone. And then I went to Birmingham to work with some. I didn't know nothing about that thing. And then I took that books of Mars and Stanley and said, okay, I have to learn this thing. I'll finish this PhD no matter what. And then after I finished my PhD, I said, well, I think I took a breath for a while. But then in 1981, my life changed completely. Aside that, even here in Birmingham, starting in Lesus, my wife started having serious problem of health problems. And she spent 6 months in the maternity for our friend. It was in Lesus, she started bleeding, and the doctor put her almost all the pregnancy in the maternity there in Birmingham. Every day I went there twice to visit her. And back in Recife in 1981, my second son was born handicapped due to medical incompetence. And that made a whole difference in my life. I almost, from that on, I practically could not go to anywhere. I did travel here in Brazil sometime, but it came to a point where I couldn't go anywhere else, except when the travel involved one day travel. I could go in the morning. I did many of this trip. I would go in the morning, early in the morning, and come back late in the night on the same day, because she wouldn't manage the house alone. And I think that made me not to try to. I had to just to survive and to get some money from CNPq. I had to publish something, and the easiest path, I see, okay, this model, this guy didn't do this didn't do that, and there is always something that is. It's left over for you for doing. If you try to do something very, very ambitious, you may end nowhere. As Mike Costelli says it very well in his talk, when he went back from his time in Trieste, he said, two or three times I was on the verge of writing a paper, and some group had done it. So I stopped trying to do it myself alone here in Birmingham, nowhere to talk and waste my time. So I guess I did. I stay with Spinglass and in this business because I will push one thing or other once in a while, and that is
I see.
But I had some experimentalists here doing, as you may see in my publication list, there are some a magnetism group who does experimental work, and we talk a lot.
I see. During your time at Recife or UCLA or elsewhere, did you ever teach a class about spinning glasses or replica symmetry breaking? And if yes, do you have any? No. Okay.
No.
Is there anything else about that era, that epoch that you'd like to share with us that we may have skipped over?
Let me see. If I said to, okay. Oh, I said that it was a real miracle. My going to Birmingham and staying there. I said that to you, and I think that period, beforehand, I just would like to say that I had the luck, the happiness of working under two Nobel Prize laureates who were my advisors, and to be linked to just two, it's very fun. You got happy about that, so, and I am more happy about that because I am sure that I will be linked to three Nobel laureates. Because I'm sure. I was hoping it was last year, but it was maybe this year that Paris is going to go to get his a Nobel Prize. Maybe this year, and I will be very happy when that happens. Very happy, because it's always a commemoration of the human intelligence to give Nobel Prize, and because I know him. He was very nice, giving me a copy of his book about the glass in infinite dimensions. He gave me a copy. Although Francesco was a little bit suspicious about but Paris, no, it's all right. I guess he's not going to make a friend. And I even refused a good one of my best friends. He asked me a copy. I said, no, I promise Paris not give me anybody a copy of this book. Well, I think the last thing I would like to say, one thing I would like to say is that I am very happy that I will be linked to three Nobel Prize laureates. And this time, I as an aside to you to know, when David Taulis and Mike Kosselitz were nominated Nobel laureate, that big feast with food and shows that, and the flowers from Sanremo and from Italy, that and the Nobel Committee gives away some invitation, but you have to ask for that. And then I applied for that invitation. I said, well, I am a student for two Nobel laureates. I guess I should be there. Don't you think so? But they didn't give me that. They didn't get the invitation. But I would like to apply. I'm sure they will apply and ask for Paris support, for they give me that support next time. It's a big feast, and it's free.
So So you mentioned that you have you've kept some papers, some mementos that you are particularly attached to from that era, and I strongly encourage you to consider having them deposited in an academic archive at some point, or at least make plans for it if you can. So.
Yes. I think it's. I have letters from. I kept a dose of letters from Bray and Wu, and it's nice. You gave me the opportunity to read again that letter, and I could, you know, I could have gone to Michael Moore invited us, Professor Saul and me, to go to Manchester. They had money for us to go there and to work on solving a TAP equation, they discuss, and maybe that could result in a paper. Alan Bray pointed out some points and gave me some details of his calculations. And I have a very, very, very beautiful letter from Professor Taus on his 65th anniversary. I was invited. I missed. I couldn't attend him. He invited me 3 times to visit him, but due to my family problems, I didn't go any of the time. End of the time. I almost went to Canada, to Toronto. There is an international center for science there, and they promote, maybe you know that, I applied for a 1 year there. I almost went there. They gave me the support, but I had some problem and I couldn't go. It was nice to talk to you because I could see my back to my life and see what I have done and you to wish you a good success to this. And see how fundamental education is, because in my second time in the United States, my daughter went to a secondary school, and I even was called by the mathematical professor and the physics teacher, the teacher at the secondary school, saying, "Well, your daughter is very bright. You should take care of that and this and that and that and that." And you see, it's amazing. I look up, but now talking to you sincerely, as a last thing, I watch all the interview that you have done. I don't invite anything because everyone has his own life and cannot comply about it. Life is what it is, and let it be that way. And try your best. But I think most people went to the best school in the world and having the best teachers in the world and the tutor and all the conditions to bloom. Anything that you wish to do. That makes a great difference. Education is fundamental. And there was a very lucky guy, the way that things turned out to me.
Thank you very much. We were lucky to talk to you.
Good. I wish you all the best in this project.